welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Monday, January 18th, 2010. I still have trouble saying that. I find myself writing 2009 still sometimes.
I'm having trouble with that too, so.
You know, that usually lasts at least through January and like sometimes into February a little bit and then it's gone. But, you know, but usually it's over within a few weeks. But, you know, those first few weeks, you know.
Yeah, it's just 2010. I mean, every time I still write it, it's like 2010. I'm like, really? I mean, seriously? We're not in Jupiter? I mean, 2010? I mean, I don't know. There's something.
I don't know about you.
I'm very anticlimactic about this 2010.
Yes. Very.
You know, I expected more. I don't know.
You know, once upon a time, I expected more, but I think I long since stopped expecting more.
But why? I mean, we went through a couple of decades of incredible progress in technology and things and other things. Well,
here's the thing. Look,
I think the whole space thing is disappointing.
Yes, the space thing is disappointing. There's no like you can't book a flight to the space station, or you kind of can, but it costs like $15 million or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
You know, and you have to pay the Russians to get there.
Right.
But you still look. You look at some of the things. The problem is you start taking it for granted because it's just part of normal life. So you're like, oh.
I know. But I think honestly, it's just the whole space thing.
Okay, I can give you the space thing because you know all the other.
You know,
technology,
we're not. Like, there's not people living in the moon. I mean, there's. I mean, come on, this stupid space station's a joke. I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pathetic. That part. I mean, a lot of other stuff. Yes, I know. But that part is just...
Look at all of the things we've got right now that, like, something from 30 years
like
ago
we're doing the show. I mean, like, we're doing the show right now. I understand. I know. But the whole space thing just got me on a down note.
I know. But on the other hand, you got, you know, Virgin Galactic's going to be doing their first flight in the next couple of years.
Yeah. How much are they charging?
Like 30,000 or something.
30 grand. I mean, come on.
For like 10 minutes in space.
Exactly. I mean, come on.
But you know, that's just the start. You know, it'll get cheaper.
Unless, of course, on the very first
test flight that has like Richard Branson and like, I don't know, Steve Jobs or somebody blows up. And then it'll be another decade or two before you see it again. But, you know, if they're successful, you know.
If.
Well, you know, and you know, even so, you still might get, you know, the same kind of odds, like 1 out of 50 blows up and kills everybody. But, you know.
For 30 grand, oh boy. You know, those are very bad odds, by the way.
Or was it more than 30 grand? I don't know. I think they want to get it to 30 grand. Maybe it's starting.
Yeah, I think it's still a lot more expensive. But anyway, all right. Enough of me being disappointed with 2010.
Okay, so we conferred before the show as usual, and we agreed on a whole bunch of topics, which are ones probably everybody expects out of us here. So let's start with Google's China announcement. Do you want to give it a quick background?
I thought to start with Haiti.
Okay, fine. Let's start with Haiti.
What's wrong with Haiti?
There's nothing wrong with Haiti. It's just like I had them written down in a different order. It doesn't actually
matter. Okay. Oh, I didn't. Okay. Well, yeah, that's true. The Google China thing did happen before the earthquake.
So let's talk about Haiti first.
Okay. So, just because of the magnitude of it, I guess I guess he didn't tell me that I couldn't tell the story, but you know, okay, I can tell. What the hell? Whatever.
Go ahead.
I'll tell the story. If
you
he listens to the podcast
or whatever, yeah.
I'll leave it anonymous, but it's kind of like it's not going to help that much. my best friend from high school, you know. He's from Haiti, okay. And we went to high school together for I think since 7th grade through 12th grade, and we've kept in touch up until today. He's a doctor at But then living in Ohio, you briefly met him. You probably maybe don't remember him. He was at my graduation when I graduated from my master's at Purdue.
Okay.
And so, you know, we're still friends to this day. He has a lot of relatives from Haiti, so we've been talking this week after the earthquake happened about what's been going on, et cetera, and so forth. But one of the things that about that is that his, you know, we never knew until recently that the reason he was exiled from Haiti and only came to light after his father passed away recently. And his father, I dearly cared about very much. He was very kind to me, and you know, it's very sad how he passed away. It was not a very elegant, you know, this last few years he was very ill. But he found out that he was Duvalier's accountant. Okay.
Oh, okay.
And that's why he had to flee. Okay. Apparently, at some point, Duvalier got pissed off at him and wanted to kill him. Okay. Which is the reason why they came to Puerto Rico. We never knew. I mean, as kids, we never knew this, and nobody told the story until it passed away. Recently, this earthquake really put a big problem in their family, because mother just had surgery, brain surgery recently, and she is not recovering that well. She actually needs care. And the situation in Haiti over the last few years had improved enough to the point that her aunts had said, listen, we can care for her. Why don't we bring her back here? She doesn't like the cold. I mean, he lives in Ohio. Sister lives in New Jersey. We're going to set up a place for her down here. Well, quake happened, and you know, that those plans are down the tubes. I mean, and there was a lot of more bigger concerns. He spoke to his family, and they for the most part are fine, thankfully. As far as I know, I haven't gotten any further updates, but as far as I know right now, luckily they are fine. But definitely, I mean, this, you know, I've never seen an earthquake of such a magnitude of destruction. I mean, I've met people who survived the Mexico one, like the big Mexico City one, for example, and I've never seen anything like this in terms of the sheer devastation and how it affected everybody. I mean, he barely got to talk to them right now. I mean, the lack of communication is unbelievable, but you see the pictures of the whole devastation. It's just quite shocking. I mean, I don't know about you, but I was just it's just unbelievable how just the whole place is just flattened. I mean, pretty much. The epicenter was so darn close to the capital. I guess that's what you get with a 7.0, that the epicenter is that close.
Well, that and you know, construction that's not necessarily, let's say, up to current earthquake-proof standards that you'd see.
I don't think they were thinking about earthquakes. Yeah. I mean, the construction, for the most part, is a lot of concrete. It's made more to resist hurricanes, you know, the good ones, not for earthquakes. You know, you saw these concrete buildings that were just piling to the ground. I mean, well, it just broke apart.
Also, you know, it's not a wealthy country. It's not like they're spending a lot of extra effort on you know, safety standards for their buildings anyway.
That's true, but even the rich areas got slammed. I think it was strong enough and close enough that it didn't matter apparently where you got hit. But one of the things that I've also found out with experience is that over the years is that for earthquakes, wooden construction actually withstands that a lot better than concrete. Yep. Okay, it gives a lot more. That's why you go to California. Most of the houses are made out of wood. And you know, over there, I mean, you keep thinking about more hurricanes and earthquakes, and it's just, you know, it's not the best thing. What do you think? Here, I got a question. What do you think of the response so far to what's happened? What's your take?
Well, you know, I think folks are rushing to respond. I think there's a lot of obstacles in the way of doing response. I think you have the usual chaos that follows those kinds of situations. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you don't expect after something like this happening, you know, that you're going to have like the super coordinated, everything works perfectly as if you'd planned it in advance, because of course you can't. And
you can.
Yeah, I mean, you can do better or worse, but I mean, like you said, this is not, you would expect, for instance, that in the best case scenario, you have a natural disaster hitting in a major industrialized power, and they would be able to kick ass and do everything right. But then you look at Katrina, and you realize that that's not even in you. Basically, that's the best possible setup you could have to react to a natural disaster, is something happening in the U.S. You know, in a major city in the U.S. And that
unless
fell
it's
apart.
Being run by apparently by idiotic boobs.
But whatever. The thing is, like, that's sort of your best case scenario. So when you have something happen go ahead.
The one thing I am surprised is just that, you know, I think that the response has been good. I mean, I think that given the constraints, you've got. The port is destroyed. I mean, they've been trying to bring ships in. You can't even get them to the dock. Apparently, the whole port just shattered. So I think that there's a good response. I will tell you that one of the things that I just found appalling during the week, I don't know if you heard the comments by
Robert,
fucking idiot. Yes. You know, I happen to have met that jerk off once. Did I tell you about this?
Meeting Pat Robinson?
Well, I was in college.
I don't think so.
I went to the vacation to Virgin Islands, and I don't know. He was staying at the same fucking hotel I was one time. I don't know. Guy's a jerk off. They made a deal with the devil. That's it. Yeah, that's it. Oh wow.
Well, look, wow. I mean, he's had a long history of comments along
of
those
being
lines,
a moron.
So, yeah, whatever.
Okay. And then, of course, apparently Rush Limbaugh was concerned that apparently Obama is actually responding to the crisis with
using our taxes.
Organization. Well, no, with organization. Well, with organization and actual response, and therefore it may make him look good. So therefore, that's bad. If I understood his comments, really.
Now, the comment I heard that I thought was attributed to Limbaugh, but maybe I got confused, was that, you know, there's no need to donate to Haitian relief because we already have it's called our income tax.
Oh, that's a cute one. Well, I can believe that one too. I don't know.
Here's the bottom line on this thing. I don't know that there's much to say. I mean, there's a natural disaster, a huge human tragedy. Relief efforts are stepping up. You once again have a Bush and Clinton show, although it's the younger Bush this time, doing fundraising for support, which is interesting. It's not that you can. There's no one you can go and say blame somebody and say, oh my God, it's this person's fault that this happened. There's no, you know, certainly there will be retrospective analysis on, you know, if they rebuild stuff, will they build it up to earthquake codes? If they do, it probably won't be another one like this in anybody's lifetime. It's a natural disaster. There's not much to say. It's a horrible thing. You know, people are trying to help as best they can, and the impact on that country is going to last for a very, very long time. You know,
yeah, I think you summed it up pretty well.
So, okay, we need to take a break. We'll be back with something else. Okay, we're back. I guess. So now you want to do Google, or you want to do
Let's go into Google. Okay.
Give the background, Yvonne.
Well, I don't know if I'm better able to
Give the background.
You go ahead. There we go.
Okay.
All right.
As with a lot of internet companies, a few years back, Google decided to go into the China market. Now, one thing with the internet is, you know, anybody in the world can theoretically go to Google.com. Now, China does some blocking things, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But there's still a desire to do localized content, so that Google would open a Google China, a Google.cn, that's, you know, natively in Chinese, does some things that are specific to China. Also, of course, you know, Google runs a business on advertising, have, you know, Chinese ads and do the whole thing locally there. And in addition, they've got some other presence in the country, of course. And so when Google entered the Chinese market, they agreed essentially to play by Chinese government rules. China is very much about censoring the internet. They call it the Great Wall of the Great Firewall of China, because of course, you know, this is not a place where the American First Amendment rules and anybody can talk about anything and do whatever they want. There's a lot of sensitivity towards appropriate and inappropriate political discussion. So, you know, as an example, the Chinese government does not want you to go in and be able to search on all kinds of stuff about the Tiananmen uprisings in 1989 and get all kinds of detail about that. So that's one kind of thing that's censored. There are all kinds of other things that are censored. Google agreed to play that game and censor their search results. Now, even when they were doing this, one of the things that Google did was they didn't just remove the results blind. They would leave something in that said, there would have been a result here, but we censored it, you know, because we had to, essentially. But this last week, Google put out an announcement on their blog, which then, of course, got repeated everywhere in the universe, that they, along with a bunch of other companies, had been attacked in a way where people were trying to get information about Chinese human rights activists. And Google didn't come right out and say it was the Chinese government doing it, but that's certainly one of the possibilities out there. And basically, they were trying to, you know, hacking into Gmail, you know, other things like this, apparently using some vulnerabilities in the Internet Explorer browser. So Google did a number of things in response to this. They've changed their default behavior on things like Gmail to be more secure. But specifically here, they basically said, look, you know, we're stopping doing this in China. We are, because of this kind of thing, it's made us, you know, more aware of the situation, blah, blah, blah. I forget the exact words they used. But long and short of it is they said they're going to stop censoring results in China. And they will negotiate with the Chinese government about it. But if in the end the Chinese government says, you just can't do that, then they're just going to pull out of China entirely. And that's about where we were. There's been a lot of speculation by various folks in terms of, you know, what Google's real motivations are here, what's really going on behind the scenes, etc. But that's the long and short of it. So, Yvonne, what are your thoughts?
I was actually just, you know, it's a very difficult game when you're trying to cooperating with China and this censorship thing, you know, and then you wind up being the target of attacks like a number of companies, because Google wasn't the only one that apparently was.
No, it was about 20, 25 companies apparently.
The one thing, it's a slippery slope. I mean, I don't know of any other country where we're participating in something like this. I mean, the companies are participating in something like this.
I'll give you one, the U.S. There's the whole warrantless wiretapping bullshit. No.
But that part I understand. The one thing about tapping, I'm talking about the blocking, the censorship, not the infiltrating.
But it's all the same thing. It's all allowing the local government's policy.
There's two different things. One thing is that when you are allowing eavesdropping of the communications that are flowing through a network, versus the other part, which is basically just participating in the blocking of the dissemination of information. Okay, I see them very differently.
Okay, I don't deny they are different. I would say they're very, very closely related.
Because one thing is that that part about the eavesdropping
in both cases, it depends on which cases.
For example, the reason why I say it's different is because it can be used for very different things. One is, for example, if I am in a lawsuit or if I am in a criminal investigation in which I am trying to arrest somebody and I have a proper warrant. Now, the reason why I know that you and I have both been upset is when those powers get abused. Now, I understand that, but I see that as different. I see that differently because the company that is participating in this is not effectively putting policies to change anything.
All they're doing is allowing access.
But anyway, I
just want to say this. You know, Yahoo got in trouble a couple of years ago, at least in some PR trouble, for exactly this kind of thing where you say, okay, in the U.S., of course, if lawful authorities ask you to have access to blah, blah, blah for purposes of law enforcement or the courts or the whatever, then of course they're going to do that. Well, you know, but the same thing is true if you're operating in a country like China. And Yahoo gave up internal information with a legal subpoena from the Chinese government for information about activists who used Yahoo services.
Correct.
And if you go by that, well, you know, you're just doing – you're operating in a business. You have to abide by their laws, blah, 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 blah. It's the same thing, whether it's censorship or revealing records or whatever. It's the question.
I see a difference between the censorship and the other part. To me, there's an enormous difference in one or the other, because to be quite honest, here's the difference that I see. One is that the government is grabbing this information in order to arrest people and throw them into jail. That is one thing they're doing. The other one is about blocking anybody about knowing about the fact that those people got arrested or going into jail. Okay. Now, you can see, maybe you don't see the difference, but to me, it's an enormous difference, because if a government like the U.S. goes and does something like that, if at least there is freedom of information to flow, that people will find out that happened.
Well, okay.
It brings pressure to bear on the government in order for them not to abuse their power.
Same thing. In the UK and Germany, there are significant restrictions on that kind of information that can be provided. Same in Canada, for that matter, although a little bit less so. I mean, this is not restricted to China. I mean,
there is a big thing that is restricted to China in the sense that if the government control that there is on the websites that people can go and the depth of what's controlled. I mean,
I will grant you that point.
I mean, there are 30,000 – it is an estimate that there are 30,000 people in China dedicated to monitoring of internet content, okay?
Yeah.
That is far more expansive than – I'm sure than almost any other country.
I would guess that it's more expensive in terms of personnel, but we probably do the same thing, just using technology more efficiently instead of people.
But to block sites?
Well, not necessarily to block
sites. But to you, they both seem the same. Okay, all right.
Yeah, to me, it's the same. But let's talk specifically about the censorship stuff then, and completely eliminate the other stuff. I think this is an area where Google specifically has said that their mission is the free flow of information, and the question is whether. The argument before was that even with these censored results, they provided a huge service to the Chinese people where they were able to get access to much more information than before.
Yes.
And that even with that censorship, and that by the fact that they showed where the censorship was, even that was sort of making a statement. Whereas now they're potentially, you know, losing access entirely. Now, I would say, you know, hey, run a Google China site out of the U.S., out of American servers. China will block it, but then you have your typical arms race for those kinds of things, and people have ways around that kind of stuff that want it. You know, if the jurisdiction you're in doesn't have the laws you want, go to a different one. This is the 21st century. You shouldn't be restrained by the.
Listen. I mean, the Chinese have, I'm sure, I mean, I don't know if you can go, I mean, you can run a website from the U.S. and they can access the search results. I don't think it's the issue. I mean, the bigger issue, obviously, is, I mean, Google wasn't in it just to do that. I mean, they wanted to run a business in China.
Well, yeah, of course.
They wanted to, I mean, that is the point. I mean, and...
Well,
you know,
and so this is the question here. Are they doing the kind of thing where they're saying that they are willing to give up that potential revenue stream because they believe the morally correct thing to do would be to do something else, as opposed to
I think that as with it has to come down to the point to where in everything that you do, there will always be some rules and restrictions. The point is that whether you can live with them or not. I think it is – I will tell you that I think Google is arriving at the point where with the Chinese rules, okay, that it's just – you know, this is just impossible
to
live with.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think that this is do you think this is really sort of a moral calculation, or do you think this is an issue where they determined that their potential liability in China was greater than their potential financial benefit, and it was a purely financial calculation?
I think that there is. I think that honestly, it has nothing to do with finances.
Okay.
Their market share in China is relatively small compared to their competitors. I really do not believe
the two things I've heard about that, by the way, they're second at about 25% mm-hmm. of the market share, and they own an interest in the person who's number one.
I understand that, but I don't think if financial was the calculation, they would have just kept mum and not said a word. Because that certainly was more profitable than doing what they did. So I really think that they were putting aside the financial calculation, just saying, you know, we can't do this.
Well, unless potentially they saw some sort of calculation where this was going to blow up in their face PR-wise and hurt them in their other markets.
I really don't think so. I actually am pretty based on the actions, I'm pretty convinced that that this is not a financial calculus from Google. I really don't. I mean, I've seen Google do a lot of things for which they are not making money from.
Yes.
Okay. I really don't see how Google was just, you know, adding up, you know, millions or billions and just arrived at some financial model for this. I think that the financial calculation that they had to put is, shit, if we pull out of Google, I mean, to pull out of China, how much would we lose and can we live with that? That's about it.
Yeah. One other thing you'll note, I have not seen in the few days since Google's announcement a stampede of other companies saying they're going to leave China too.
Well, I think that for other companies, it's different. I mean – You know,
well, right.
You're not an instrument of censorship. You know, when you are, say, HP, and you sell a PC, unless when they were trying to install that stupid software that they never did anyway.
Right.
But what I mean by that is this firewall software that they wanted on every PC.
And this gets back to my sort of confusion, if you want to call it that, with the other issues, which, okay, maybe you're not an agent of censorship, but just by existing within the Chinese marketplace, you potentially make your company subject to laws and disclosures and everything else that in other places we would consider violations of human rights. And you are still potentially in the position where you end up having to enable that by the mere fact that you're doing business there and have to cooperate.
I'm sure at some point you do, but the one thing is, like I said before, I mean, it's like, you know, it depends how, you know, it is not a black and white calculus, Sam.
No, of course not. But like, you know,
that's the point I'm trying to say. I mean, it's like,
although
you know,
I'd say cooperation with providing information about your users is actually worse than censorship. If I had to pick one or the other, I'd rather censor.
I don't know. That will drag us for another 20 minutes if I
anyway,
go into this.
Let's take a break and we'll determine what we're doing next. We'll be right back.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by No-Tell Motel.
Poem composed for the right hand by Steffi Weisbird. In mink kimono and muckluck, Johnny pump up, oink oink wee wee, you non-union ninny, you hoi polloi nymph, you killjoy my milky, you pinko my yoke, kilo upon kilo, hokum and hooky, jimmy and junk, no pip in my plum, no ink in my hymn, O unholy phylum, hypo and nil, hook him and ploy him, mum him and punk him, holmium, holmium, lymphoil pill.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
Okay, we're back. And I think we're going to leave China behind for now and leave for a future discussion sort of the notions of companies and individuals cooperating with lawful requests of governments, both, you know, sort of, you know, governments that are tyrannical in certain ways, or even just the U.S. government, because I think there are issues even there. But let's leave that for another time and move on to the Massachusetts Senate race. And this is one of those things where I might end up having to put in the little note at the beginning of the show that's saying, oh, well, we talked about this, but something actually happened already. It looks very close. And like the election could go either way at this point. This is, of course, for Ted Kennedy's seat. And it actually looks like the Republican has a shot. Now, probably by the time this goes out, this election will have happened and our listeners will know what happened. But I think the interesting part here that we can talk about anyway is, A, how did the Democrats let this happen? Like Massachusetts, is like
because
a blue
because they
the
elected in the primary a moron. I mean, I've been reading about her continuous series of gaffes, you know, like during the entire campaign. It's just oh my God, couldn't they have just nominated anybody who's any worse? I mean, I'm just like, geez, you know, so. So yeah, I mean, I think that the main person is just that the main problem here is just that the Democrats nominated
Well, here's the thing. There's a process behind this too. And yes, there was a primary, but the National Party could have gotten behind somebody. They could have essentially anointed somebody if they wanted to and really pushed them through and given them the resources and whatever. I think there was a massive amount of complacency here where it was basically like, hey, look, it's Ted Kennedy's seat.
Yeah, it's Ted Kennedy's seat. Massachusetts, we're going to get it.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. We can nominate a houseplant and it'll be fine. You know, in fact, maybe what we want is somebody who'll do what we tell them to as opposed to, you know, whatever. I don't know what the thought process is, but clearly they underestimated the situation and were like, yeah, whatever, you know, they'll have a little primary, somebody will win, and then they'll run, and we don't even have to worry about the Republicans because it's Massachusetts. You know, and meanwhile, so here they nominate somebody who is just having lots of problems, and the Republican is taking advantage of all those things, of course. I mean, they've had a couple missteps too, but nothing too significant. And so here we are, coming up on the election day with a neck and neck race in Massachusetts with the Republican potentially taking the Senate seat, which, by the way, is that whole magical 60th vote to pass the whole healthcare thing. Or who knows what else anybody might have wanted to get done from the Democratic side. And, you know, basically, they lose this, they can just kiss a lot of that goodbye and plan on not getting anything done for the next few years.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know...
Not like they were all that successful.
Right. Listen, you remember how we were talking about originally how it was probably a better idea to have a Congress that was from one party and a White House that was from the other.
I agree.
I mean, this is something that we've been talking about for a while. I mean, you know, well, would it be such a bad thing?
No, I want to separate a couple things here. One is, from the point of view of the Democratic caucus...
Oh, they're morons.
What?
You know, they're idiots.
You know, yes. I mean, from my point of view, for the deeper, longer-term... good governing, let's not do anything too crazy here. Yes, I like divided government. I think the best possible results come, like I said before, I think I've given an example. If you look at the last, you know, all the presidencies since I was old enough to be aware and paying attention, I think the best results came out of the Clinton presidency after the Republicans took control of Congress.
You got
stuff. The stuff that happened was the stuff that you really could get, you know, sort of past the 50-yard line with you had some quote-unquote compromise or whatever, but you got stuff that was fairly middle of the line, fairly incremental. It wasn't trying to do crazy stuff that would change everything all at once. And, you know, you got some... you had balanced budgets. You had, and I'm not saying that'll happen again. You know, the Republicans have learned to say no, and you know, but you know, I don't know. I most of the time, I think the right answer is the government not doing anything. So paralysis in government is not something I usually get upset about.
I'll tell you one thing that I see one problem with what's happening right now. At least, from the Republicans. The Republicans seem to believe that dissatisfaction with the economy improving slowly means that people actually like Republicans. Okay, and I'm looking at the numbers, and it really doesn't. They still, you know, I think that right now there is the country, and this has happened before. This won't be the first time. Is unhappy, obviously, because, you know, the economy is still somewhat shitty, okay?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm saying somewhat shitty because it used to be very shitty. Now it's only somewhat shitty. And so, you know, people are have a lot of angst because of that, and they need to blame somebody. But I don't think that – honestly, the fact that there is angst about who's running right now means that people are actually happy with, like – jumping for joy at being Republican.
Well,
so,
but look, they don't have to be jumping for joy for being Republican. They just
excited
about the Democrat.
Oh, no. Well, yes and no.
Because all it takes in like a state like Massachusetts right now, all it takes is for the Democrats not to show up.
Yeah. Right. That would be – no. That's true. That would be true. But I think that I'm talking more – not so much short term, because I think if you look at almost every presidency, this sort of stuff has happened before.
Well, no. The normal pattern in the first midterm election is for the president's party to lose seats.
To lose. Yeah.
And
I mean, it is.
I'm not surprised by any of that. The situation here with Massachusetts is more that
it's just more that they fucked up more than anything else.
I mean, like,
this is a major. This is a major league. This should have been a slam dunk, no problem, cakewalk, and they just fucked up.
Yeah,
that's
I mean, we expect. I think everybody expects that the Democrats will lose some ground in 2010. But, you know, you figured Ted Kennedy's seat was safe.
Safe. Sure.
You know?
But they fucked up.
Yeah.
They major league fucked up.
And And, you know, this is the... And the Democrats have been known for this kind of stuff, you know, in terms of snatching defeat from the jaws of victory or whatever they say.
Absolutely. They do an excellent job of that.
Time after time after time. And it'll be really interesting to see here, you know, the fallout. If the Republican wins here and then, you know, healthcare goes up in a ball of smoke and then I don't know what comes next, you know, because basically. Yeah. You know, basically at that point, in order to get anything passed, you just have to, you know, people were already complaining, or at least people on the left were complaining, that in order to get the healthcare bill out of the Senate, they had to water it down and make it so centrist, and it no longer did any of the things that progressives really wanted to do, blah, 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 blah. But guess what? You know, that's how the game's played. You have to get the middle in order to win. And in the Senate, based on the fact that there's, you know, they really, the whole you have to get 60 votes to pass anything is actually a relatively new development in the last 20 years or so. But even so, okay, so you have to get to the 60% mark, you know, but that's, you know, you're not.
They could probably get they could get around it, but
there,
you know.
The Senate could, with a majority vote.
The Senate. Yes, the Senate could get around it.
It only takes a majority vote to change the Senate rules. They could actually vote on a 51-vote basis to just get rid of the filibuster entirely.
Yes.
You know, if they really wanted to. That's always been called the nuclear option because it has all kinds of implications, and nobody wants to do it because it's going to come back to bite them when they're in the minority next time around.
It could.
But anyway, it's just... It'll be interesting to see how it continues to play out, because I think this is a situation where, you know, the Democratic base has already been incredibly frustrated by the fact that they're like, we have a big majority in the House, we have 60 votes in the Senate, and oh my God, we still can't get anything done. And now they're going to lose that 60th vote, and then they're really not going to get anything done. And at least not of that sort of agenda.
Listen,
they will get things done you can get support from both sides. But
the one thing that happened in the mid-90s was that when it became very clear as to who was trying to negotiate in good faith and who was just trying to be obstructionist. And the guys who were trying to be obstructionist got really pummeled, okay, at that time. They really took it.
Well, and the leadership, even in the minority parties, wouldn't stand for that. Because you had people like Bob Dole and I'm forgetting the rest of the names, but you had people like that who were in leadership – well – Gingrich a little bit less so, but even Gingrich, I guess. But you had the people in the leadership who actually had an interest, even the minority party, in getting things done. They weren't just, let's stop everything. Now, there certainly
were... If they vote A, we vote B. If they're C, we're D. I mean, it's just...
Right. I mean,
because that's what it seems lately.
There certainly were some issues where that was the mindset, even 20, 30 years ago. Or longer, but it wasn't everything. And now it pretty much is most things. I shouldn't say that. There's still, you know, Congress still passes things. You know, there have been a number of things passed.
Occasionally,
they're generally the uncontroversial things. And actually, sometimes I worry more about those, because the things that can pass the Congress with no opposition at all are the things that completely scare me. Yeah, because anyway, the Democrats are screwing everything up as usual, because they just can't figure out how to organize things in such a way that they can actually get their agenda across. And part of that is, of course, they don't really have a solid, unified agenda. And Obama is very much, you know, as anyone who read his books would have predicted, not the kind of person who is saying, okay, here's my agenda, and shoving it through at all costs. And
well, I don't actually agree with your statement. I'm sorry. I think one of the things that has been pointed out flatly is that Obama actually did have an agenda. One of the biggest things has been healthcare, which he said from the beginning. And the fact is that he has refused to deviate from that agenda. And people are saying that the reason why Democrats are getting beat up is because he has not deviated from his agenda. So
I could see that, and I'll give you two other stats to counteract what I said. One is I saw someone put together some stats. I think it was Congressional Quarterly or somebody put out a report that basically listed sort of congressional votes where the president took a definitive position. What was his win rate, essentially? And Obama's the highest such win rate since LBJ. You know, so and the key there was he actually took a position in very few votes.
Right.
But, you know, the ones he did take a position on, he generally won at like a 97% rate or something like that. Something insane. Second is a number of people have put out lists of the things that he has accomplished over the last year and gotten through. And, you know, if you pay attention to the media and even, you know, what I was just saying, because, you know, I'm doing a flip here, but it looks like nothing's happened. You know, if healthcare fails, then everything's failed and nothing's happened, nothing significant's happened. But there have been a lot of individual things that have happened somewhat under the radar, where even if he hasn't completely gotten the goal, he's pushed things in certain directions in terms of changing policy A, changing policy B, changing policy C, starting the process of doing A, B, C. And he's doing a lot of that kind of stuff quietly. What I meant specifically by my last comment was what he has not done, and I actually think this is a good thing. I want to be clear here. Is he has not gone to Congress with a specific set, like for healthcare. He went into healthcare saying, you know, I have these three general principles. I want to make sure you improve things in these three areas. Right. And the details are up to you.
Whereas,
as opposed to, you know, the style of saying, okay, I want a bill that does exactly this, 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 and if you don't vote for it, I'm going to crush you, and you must make this happen, and shoving it through using all of his political might. He has not done that. He's instead come up and healthcare is a perfect example. He just said, you know, I want to make things better on these three metrics. You know, give me a bill that does that.
Okay, no, and I actually agreed with that. But so okay. All right. So anyway, we're done for today.
We can be done. You know, we'll have to save Conan versus Leno for another time, and
well, let's see what find out what happens this week. I don't know. People keep saying that apparently there's some kind of a deal cut, you know.
Yeah, well, it sounds like the deal is Leno takes back the Tonight Show and Conan gets paid off and goes starts another show on another network in a few months.
That's what they say, but we'll see what happens.
We'll see. I think they should have a duel or something.
I actually would like just to cancel both shows and just have we could start replaying reruns of Johnny Carson.
That would work. That would work. You know, I'll be honest. I have not watched, you know, a single Tonight Show by either of these two men ever.
No kidding, not a single one.
The last time I watched a complete Tonight Show from beginning to end was with Johnny Carson.
Okay.
Now, I've watched clips and little bits here and there, but I have not watched a complete Tonight Show from end to end since
I think that I have watched. I have not watched many. Okay. Okay. But I have. I'm sure that I must have watched a couple.
Now,
okay.
I did watch some Letterman. I watched Letterman for a while.
I've watched a number of the Letterman shows over the years. But definitely, I've watched far more Letterman shows than I've watched.
You
combined.
Know, I will give you one potential exception. I can't remember for sure if I did or not, but there is a chance, I tell you, that I watched Leno's first show.
there probably is a good shot that that happened.
I know I watched the beginning of it. I don't know if I finished it.
I don't know if I watched that that Leno's first show. I don't know. I don't know if I did.
Anyway, we're done.
Anyway, all right, we're done.
By the way, I should mention, I did get one feedback over the week, but the person said no need to mention this on the air, so I won't say anything other than thank you for the feedback. It was good additional feedback. Once again, somebody agreeing with a lot of the stuff we said. So
from a new person or a different person?
No, it was actually the same person as last week responding to our response to their feedback from before.
Oh, okay. All right.
Anyway.
Okay. All right.
Anyway. We're done. Thank you very much. As usual, email me, abelsmay@abelsmay.com, with any questions, comments, thoughts, or anything like that, or post on abelsmay.com when I post the show. Tell all your friends to listen to, please. And what else? Is there anything else to say, Yvonne?
No, just let me go to sleep.
Okay, let Yvonne go to sleep, and we'll talk to you all next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.